The threat of a pandemic has become very real.
However, the World Health Organization says there is some good news to tell. This is Tuesday, March 10th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also coming your way, a UN investigator has a warning about coronavirus in North Korea. And Pyongyang carries out another round of missile tests. The White House is getting a new fence of its very own. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The leader of the World Health Organization said Monday that the deadly coronavirus has gained a foothold in so many countries that the threat of a pandemic has become very real. But WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus voiced optimism as well.
Over the weekend, we crossed 100,000 reported cases of COVID-19 in 100 cases. It's certainly troubling that so many people and countries have been affected so quickly. Now that the virus has a foothold in so many countries, the threat of a pandemic has become very real. But it would be the first pandemic in history that could be controlled. The bottom line is, we're not at the mercy of the virus. The great advantage we have is that the decisions we all make as governments, businesses, communities, families, and individuals can influence the trajectory of this epidemic. We need to remember that with decisive early action, we can slow down the virus and prevent infections. Among those who are infected, most will recover.
But the impact from the coronavirus was unabated, with the death toll across Europe reaching 511, with 97 new deaths in Italy, the epicenter of the outbreak on that continent. Globally, WHO said that more than 100 countries are now reporting coronavirus cases, with more than 106,000 people reported as being ill, with the death toll topping 3,500. Across the globe, China reported its lowest number of new coronavirus cases, while about a quarter of Italy's population was under quarantine orders. And passengers from a cruise ship were disembarking in the western U.S. state of California after some tested positive for the virus. In the United States, there have been 21 deaths from the virus and more than 500 cases reported. With a confirmed coronavirus case in the area of Indian Wells in Southern California that hosts the BNP Paribas tennis tournament, Officials announced the event will not be held. It was due to begin this week with a field including such stars as Rafael Nadal, Novak Djokovic, Serena Williams, and Naomi Osaka. Two members of Congress have also said they're self-quarantining after having contact at a recent conservative political conference with someone who was tested positive for the coronavirus. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. Taiwan's main opposition party has elected a reform-minded chairman which could mean the party will reconsider its long-standing support for closer ties with China. South Korea Monday adopted a new distribution system to evenly distribute masks to prevent the spread of the new coronavirus. Meanwhile, more than 100 countries have implemented measures to restrict South Koreans' entry into their countries due to the virus. 1 month after the death of China's coronavirus whistleblower, Dr. Li Wenliang, civil groups and rights advocates at home and abroad are demanding answers from the Chinese government's investigation into his alleged grievance and speech suppression. You're listening to VOA Asia. A UN investigator Monday warned of serious consequences if COVID-19 gains a foothold in North Korea and urged the government to accept international offers of help to contain the spread of the deadly virus. As Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, the investigators submitted a report on the North's human rights situation to the UN Human Rights Council.
The UN Special Rapporteur on the Situation of Human Rights in North Korea, Thomas Ojea Quintana, says the lack of freedoms and wide-range abuses in the tightly controlled, highly secretive society run counter to the transparency needed to combat the coronavirus epidemic. Ojea Quintana acknowledges the government's extensive efforts in preventing an outbreak of this virus inside the North. He warns a widespread infection in North Korea would be devastating for the people, as many are malnourished, suffering from stunted growth, and are vulnerable to getting sick. The UN official is calling on North Korea to allow full and unimpeded access to medical experts and aid workers, and urges the government not to restrict access to vital information. The government in Pyongyang has not publicly disclosed any cases of COVID-19.
Measures to contain and combat the spread of COVID-19, such as lockdowns and quarantines, as well as treatment of patients, should be carried out in strict accordance with human rights standards. Further isolation of the country is not the answer. The international community must respond accordingly and offer medical and scientific assistance.
The United States and other countries have imposed economic sanctions on North Korea because of its nuclear weapons program. Ojea Quintana says sanctions create economic hardships for the people, and given the coronavirus crisis, they should be reviewed. The UN rapporteur describes the overall human rights situation in North Korea as abysmal.
Basic freedoms continue to be limited. Control and surveillance is pervasive, and the population fears arbitrary arrest and mistreatment, including detention in political prison camps. A recent account refers to frequent deaths of prisoners due to hard labor, lack of food, contagious diseases, and overcrowding.
Ojea Quintana says women are the most abused members of this repressive society. He says women are the primary caretakers of the household and are under pressure to provide money and labor to the government. He says women are vulnerable to threats, imprisonment, and sexual abuse from local state officials. Additionally, he says they have no political power or recourse to justice. The North Korean delegation boycotted the UN Council session and did not avail itself of its right of reply as the concerned country. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
North Korea test-fired 3 short-range rockets Monday. It is the 2nd North Korean launch in a week, the latest mixed signal from Pyongyang, which has hinted at once international help to fight the coronavirus. More from VOA's Bill Gallo in Seoul.
South Korean officials say the North used multiple rocket launchers to fire the short-range weapons into the sea off Korea's east coast. Japan said they appeared to be ballistic missiles. North Korea's 2nd missile launch in a week may signal a return to tensions, except the North is also hinting at dialogue. In a surprise move last week, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un sent a letter of condolence to South Korea, which has seen an explosion of coronavirus cases. Some analysts believe Kim's friendly letter signals he wants economic or virus-related aid. North Korea has not reported any coronavirus infections, but many fear it is hiding an outbreak that could turn into a humanitarian disaster. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
Happening now in Asia, Myanmar police say the army has filed a lawsuit against Reuters news agency and a local lawmaker for criminal defamation, weeks after the military objected to a news story published about the death of 2 Rohingya Muslim women as a result of shelling in Rakhine State. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us. Private poultry farms in central Afghanistan's Bamyan province are thriving and meeting much of the local demand for chicken. Success has led the farmers to explore shipping poultry beyond the province, located west of Kabul. VOA's Zafar Bamyani recently visited one of the farms and filed this report, narrated by Behzad Hamdard.
Since the fall of the Taliban regime in 2001, Afghanistan's entrepreneurs have enjoyed the opportunity to explore new business ventures. From restaurants to grocery stores, businessmen became more and more comfortable investing their money. One example is this chicken farm in Bamyan province. According to a local union, private investments of over $65,000 have helped open some 40 poultry farms that are satisfying demand for chicken in Bamyan.
80 to 85%, maybe even up to 90% of the market's demand can be met in Bamyan by the farms that have been opened. And in some seasons, we have enough to even export outside of Bamyan.
In addition to promoting local self-sufficiency in food production, Bamyan's poultry farms are providing badly needed jobs. Each farm produces 2,000 to 10,000 chickens in 40-day cycles.
We have about 10,000 chickens. Our goal is to create jobs and income.
I work here. I raise the chickens so that we can stop importing poultry and have our own products.
Butchers and buyers of poultry in Bamyan say locally raised poultry tastes better than chicken transported from afar.
People buy a lot of locally produced poultry because the chicken is fresh, it cooks easily, and is tasty.
The prices of imported chicken from Pakistan kept changing. This is better. It has a fixed price.
Local officials say Bamyan poultry farms could one day sell chickens to neighboring provinces in the future.
For now, it's meeting Bamyan's needs, but it certainly has the potential to one day be able to export outside the province.
While the business is good, poultry farmers in Bamyan note that insecurity along the roads can pose a challenge in transporting their products. For Zafar Bamyani in Bamyan, Afghanistan, Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
Coming your way, the White House is dealing with a fence of another kind. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. With VOA Asia, also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. Japan is set this week to revise a law allowing Prime Minister Shinzo Abe to declare a state of emergency over the coronavirus if needed, as he takes heat for his handling of the outbreak ahead of the Tokyo Olympic Games. Visit VOA Asia Facebook every day. You'll get top stories and great features to see and share. President Trump is finally getting a bigger, stronger barrier, not along the U.S. southern border with Mexico, but in his own front and backyard. The U.S. Secret Service and the National Park Service have teamed up to replace the current White House fence after a series of security breaches, including a 2014 incident when an intruder scaled the fence and made it into the White House before being stopped. VOA's Dora Macquarie reports.
One of the most photographed views in Washington is partially obscured by this barrier that shields the ongoing installation of a new White House fence. The first part of the replacement barrier is already up. It's about 4 meters tall, almost double the height of the old fence. The posts are thicker and stronger, too. They also incorporate anti-climb and anti-intrusion technology.
Almost doubling the size of the fence and give it some kind of, you know, blast and ram protection. So everything, all the pieces had to be beefed up.
The very first White House barrier, a wooden fence, was erected by Thomas Jefferson in the early 1800s. Over the years, stone and iron fencing were added. The barriers were not meant to keep people out. Visitors often freely roamed the White House grounds.
And so it was relatively easy to get inside and to go upstairs to the second floor. That's where the president worked before the West Wing was built. So you can imagine the president trying to get work done and just being besieged by office seekers, lobbyists, all types of people who would essentially stand out in the hallway and hope to get a quick meeting with the president or catch a glimpse of the president.
Up until the 1920s, presidents decided how accessible to make the grounds. The United States Secret Service ultimately took control of security after three sitting presidents were killed during a 36-year period between 1865 and 1901.
Between Abraham Lincoln's assassination, James Garfield's assassination, William McKinley's assassination, if you had been born in 1840, over the course of your lifetime, you had witnessed 3 presidential assassinations.
The U.S. Commission of Fine Arts worked to help balance security improvements to the new fence while keeping the barrier visually appealing.
You can't just take the old design and double it. You actually have to start rethinking how they are in relation, you know, the pieces, what they're made of, how they look together.
Construction is expected to end in 2021. And then attention might turn to a more comprehensive design for the rest of the White House complex, a plan that takes both security and aesthetics into account.
So they can pull together what's really right now a bit of a hodgepodge.
Lines of defense that won't ruin Washington's most iconic views. Dora McQuarr, VOA News, Washington.
Here's a news break from VOA Asia. Stock markets plummeted across the world Monday, plunging on dual concerns over oil prices and the economic effects of the coronavirus that spread to more than 100 countries. Dow Jones Industrial Average of 30 key U.S. stocks closed down more than 2,000 points for a loss of 7.9%. The S&P 500 fell 7.6%. Now on VOA Asia, superheroes have special powers. People who can get on a debate stage and raise enough money to run for president are considered super politicians and also have special powers. A comic book series called Political Power tells the stories of Democratic candidates running in the 2020 elections. While a few people featured in the comics are no longer in the race, Democratic voters who did not or have not voted in a primary yet can read about the two top contenders in the race to run against Trump. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has more.
In the media, these candidates have been portrayed as super rock stars as they campaign. But when did each become a phenomenon? What's turned them into super politicians?
I want to get to the heart of who they are, so I really have to do a lot of digging. I spend a couple weeks, hours a day, usually just watching a lot of video, reading a lot of interviews, especially early on in their careers.
Michael Frizzell, one of the writers of the series, wrote the comic book biographies of several of the Democratic candidates, a life of each person in 22 pages. The comic books, called Political Power from Tidal Wave Comics, feature candidates including former Vice President Joe Biden and Senator Bernie Sanders. Frizzell says his goal is to inform and entertain readers.
I wanted to write that somebody is curious about the person and maybe hasn't made a decision politically on that.
We keep these so unbiased and we keep these so middle of the road. We don't have an agenda with these whatsoever.
Publisher Darren Davis has produced other biography comics about celebrities and politicians. He says while some of the biographies are authorized, most of the political comics are not, to keep them unbiased.
Republican, we have Democrat.
Anyone from 10 years old to adults, and also schools and libraries, are picking up these comic books. But the reception has not all been good. Davis attributes that to the highly polarized political environment in the U.S., with a series featuring Democrats.
But we are going to deal a death blow to the presidency of Donald J. Trump.
The insanity of Washington Democrats is why millions of registered Democrat voters are joining our movement.
People are writing the nastiest, nastiest things on. You just don't read the comments is kind of what I've learned.
In past election years, Davis has published comics featuring Republicans as well, including then-presidential candidate Donald Trump. Let's go, Trump. Regardless of who it is, stepping onto the national stage to run for president transforms a person into a super politician, and that comes with a unique power.
Rhetoric seems to be their power, I'll tell you that. They're all good at it.
The power of speech transferred to the power of the pen as an alternative to traditional media's portrayal of those running to become president of the United States. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News.
It has been 100 years since the 19th Amendment was passed, giving women the right to vote in the United States. To commemorate the centennial, the New York Historical Society has launched a special exhibit called Women March. It explores women's collective action before and after the suffrage victory all the way into the 21st century. VOA's Penelope Pulu visited the exhibit and spoke with the curators.
The exhibit Women March at the New York Historical Society in New York City takes the visitor along 200 years of women's collective action in American history. Photographs, drawings, and archival video footage bring their activism to life. It started as early as the 1820s, says the Society's Valerie Paley.
Women came together as these moral arbiters of a new nation, and were speaking out against slavery and Indian removal and all sorts of issues by lending their names to petitions, in a way a proto-women's march, if you will.
100 years later, the passage of the 19th Amendment in 1920 granted women the right to vote. A digital interactive map shows the 19th Amendment was not inclusive. It took decades before all American women could vote, with wealthy white women being the first and black women in the South enjoying the same right only after the Voting Rights Act passed in 1965. And though white women and black women formed a coalition during that period, their perspectives were often divided along racial lines, says Pamela Walker, a team member of the exhibit.
One thing that was really significant and really important for this exhibition is to show that in any movement for women's rights and women's liberation, that there will always be tension, that women are coming from different perspectives, whether you're a white woman or a Latinx woman, or a black woman.
The latter part of the exhibit focuses on women's collective action from the 1970s through today. During this period, women marched to demand legal rights equal to men. They also marched on issue-driven topics such as gun control and reproductive rights, says Caitlin Wisner, another team member of the exhibit.
One thing that I think the Women's March of January 2017 and subsequent women's marches did was bring together an incredibly diverse group of women who share the identity of being women, but also have a multitude of other identities.
Women of color, women in the gay community, and feminists of all genders all marched together in cities all over the world one day after President Trump was inaugurated in 2017 to send a message that women's rights are human rights. Since then, women march on a broad swath of issues such as climate change, gun violence, sexual assault, and sexual discrimination. Women from all walks of life come together through digital technology and form global internet movements such as hashtag MeToo. Caitlin Wisner says the exhibit shows that securing the vote 100 years ago was just the beginning.
The idea that beyond the vote, beyond many legal hallmarks of equality, we always must keep safeguarding what we have fought so hard for.
Penelope Pulu, VOA News, New York City.
This is Science in a Minute.
Disturbances on the sun have the potential to wreak havoc with Earth's power grids and communication equipment. A new study by biologists at Duke University in North Carolina and an astronomer from the Adler Planetarium in Chicago suggests that solar storms could also mix up the navigational abilities of whales, causing them to be stranded or beached on land. Scientists have found that some animal species can detect Earth's magnetic field and use it as a kind of GPS to navigate their migrations. The study's authors say that solar storms could be disrupting signals from that magnetic field. They suspect radio frequency noise created when high-energy solar particles smack into the magnetic field could be overpowering the whale's senses. It would be like turning off their GPS during the middle of their journey. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Remember to get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Download our podcast. Take VOA Asia with you. You can visit voanews.com for our program page. See us on YouTube. Follow us on VOA Asia Twitter. And let us hear from you. How do you do that? VOA Asia Facebook and our email at voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer this evening, Keith Holmes, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and the VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day ahead.